Good morning, everyone. Like many in the media, we are mobilizing on all of our platforms, digital and terrestrial, to get you, to guide you, actually, to assist in the recovery effort in Japan. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We can answer your questions about the recovery effort. And on our website are numerous places where you can actually donate and be involved in the recovery effort. Earlier this morning, David Biello joined us. He was the associate editor. He is the associate editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American. And he answered some of my scientific questions about what's going on at Fukushima and the nuclear crisis that's developing in Japan. And he's returned to answer some of our listeners' questions that we've received all morning long. And David, first of all, good morning. Thanks for joining us once again.
No problem.
Let's just remind people that over every one of the last 36 hours, we've been looking in Japan at four different sources of leaking radiation from four damaged, if not destroyed, nuclear reactors at that Fukushima Daiichi complex in Japan. What is the environmental risk here? Here's a question from one of our listeners.
This is Miles from Ithaca, New York. It's a subject I know nobody wants to talk about, and I know we don't want to promote panic, but I'm just wondering what would happen if the entire Fukushima plant were to melt down completely. How serious is this? Could this be the nuclear holocaust that people are saying it could be?
I mean, that's basically the bottom line question. David Biello?
How bad could it get?
Right.
Well, in the worst-case scenario, total meltdown, and let's say it's all four reactors, you're going to get fuel melting through down to the bottom of the pool, and then some kind of an explosion occurs that wafts that radioactive material into the atmosphere. And that's the real danger, is it gets up and airborne and starts to kind of move about rather than staying contained in Fukushima. The worst-case scenario is that it gets about, 500 meters up into the air, and that means that it can't travel kind of more than, say, 100 kilometers in any direction. Of course, that's bad enough because Tokyo is relatively close by. But in the grand scheme of things, the tsunami is a much, much, much bigger disaster than this nuclear meltdown.
The number of dead and missing this morning, 15,000. Again, if you want to help those people who are recovering, and it's in the hundreds of thousands of people who are homeless or without power, go to our website, takeaway.org. Well, we got a comment, David Biello. Here's something that speaks to the issue of design. These are boiling water or pressurized water plants in Japan. John from New York asks you, I'd like to hear more about thorium plants. I know very little, but I've heard that their cores can't go into meltdown because the reaction is not self-sustaining. There's faster decaying waste, 500 years versus tens of thousands of years, he writes, and thorium plants cannot produce weapons-grade fuel. Thorium power plants, are they a practical alternative here?
Thorium power plants, in principle, could work. There are a couple test reactors that show that it can be done. Some of the factoids there are a little bit off. There are still plenty of, dangerous byproducts of a thorium reactor. And it's not necessarily something that would solve all the problems with uranium-fueled reactors. And, speaking of dangerous jobs, mining for uranium has produced a lot more deaths than
than actually producing the power.
Exactly.
All right. Well, someone from Louisiana who understands the risks of energy work has a question about what's going on in Japan. David, listen to this.
Yeah, I have a question regarding the dangers of the nuclear facility in Japan. How would your guests compare that to, say, a major disaster, a major fire in a big oil refinery in the southeast? Maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, how would they compare those two?
That's a good one.
That is an incredibly difficult question to answer because, there are so many variables at play. If it's a total kind of meltdown in Fukushima, it depends on kind of which way the wind is blowing and all the rest of it. If there's a major fire at a refinery, again, it depends on kind of what gets released and where it goes. I would say that the oil refinery fire is a much bigger short-term problem. It would have a lot more impacts in the short term. The problem with nuclear with nuclear disasters is their effects tend to linger for a very, very long time.
Well, let's talk about that. Here's a question I asked you earlier this morning, but let's reprise it here. Cesium-137 and strontium-90, their half-lives are about 30 years each. Those are among the worst contaminants from atomic fission or uranium fission. What do you make of the possibility that cesium-137 and strontium-90 are going to end up in people's milk or water or lungs?
Well, that's why the U.S. government is advising, Americans to get a little bit further away from the reactor. The risk here, like I said, is if there's some kind of an explosion and some of that material gets airborne, and it all depends on where it drifts. And you obviously don't want to breathe this stuff in, because you can walk away from a radioactive nuclear power plant. You can't walk away from something that you're carrying inside your body.
You know, one of the issues, and it speaks to the design questions that you've referred to in this segment. Before we go, you know, atomic fuel, uranium fuel rods in a reactor like this are stable as long as they're covered with water and in the environment that they were designed to be in, where they're at a maintained temperature. But suddenly exposed to air, the zirconium that surrounds these fuel rods becomes unstable, and they're talking about some of these spent fuel rod pools being empty of water. How fearful does that make you of the scientific the chemical reactions that are possible now?
Well, that's certainly the worst piece of news in what has been a rapidly escalating series of bad news events from Japan. If, in fact, there is no water in that spent fuel pool, and if, in fact, that fuel is fresh, which I've heard it is, that it was recently brought out, and it's very, very hot, and that heat makes it very, very susceptible to, melting and other reactions that we kind of don't want to happen. And that's why they're trying all these potentially ridiculous ideas, like dumping water from a helicopter in the water cannons. They got to get water on that fuel as fast as possible.
David Biello is Associate Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific America, and you described us as being in uncharted waters earlier this morning. We're going to ask a worker later on what they think about this, but your answer to this question: would you rather work in a coal mine or a nuclear power plant after this week?
I definitely would choose the nuclear power plant. People die in coal mines all the time.
All right. The risks associated with working in the energy industry. It's not a scientific question, but David Biello, thanks for answering our scientific questions this morning. He's Associate Editor of Environment and Energy for Scientific American. David, thanks so much.
Hope it helped.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.